Before you listen to this story, it would be helpful to read Matthew chapter 21, verses 1 to 17, Matthew's version of what we know as the story of Palm Sunday. Judas and the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. I thought it was all going to happen today. I've only ever dreamed of revolution. I've never actually been part of one. After all that has happened recently, and as Passover drew closer, it was clear that the people of the city were on edge, and I could see that Jesus was becoming more thoughtful. What he said was more enigmatic and difficult to understand than usual. Something was brewing, and I thought, I hoped, it would finally be revolution. I was brought up to be patriotic. Our Jewish faith and our land were the two things that were most important to us. Both were gifts from God. We were the chosen people, and the land of Canaan was the land God promised to us, which was why we hated the Romans so much. They were the invading force. They merely tolerated our faith with disdain, and they allowed us to live in our land with relative freedom, so long as we obeyed the laws they imposed and paid the taxes they levied. As I grew up, I became more faithful, more patriotic, and my hatred of the Romans grew more intense. Then I heard about Jesus, a strange preacher and teacher from Nazareth. I went in search of him and spent a few days watching and listening at a distance. It became clear that he was turning the world upside down, or trying to. I was delighted when eventually he noticed me and invited me to join his close friends and followers. As time went by, I became more and more convinced that Jesus was the one who was going to lead us to a revival of our faith and to liberation from Roman rule. He took my breath away nearly every day. He embraced lepers, healed the sick, spoke of the last being first and the first last. He talked about poverty, justice, compassion. He pointed out the hypocrisy of the religious elite. He made heroes out of Samaritans and wayward sons. The way he lived, the things he did, the stories he told convinced me that revolution was coming. And then, about a week before Passover, he asked one of us to get him a donkey. See what I mean? He'd never wanted a donkey before. He surprised us every day. It was only when he was sitting on the donkey and riding through the gates of the city that I realised what might be happening. Crowds began to gather. With his healing and teaching, he'd made quite a name for himself, so people were fascinated by him. Whoops and cheers began to be yelled. Then the chanting began, "Hosanna! Hosanna to the Son of David!" The crowd were behind him, and they were asserting their authority in their city. And by proclaiming him Son of David, they were asserting their Jewish roots. The irony was delicious. Here was a penniless rabbi from Nazareth being hailed as a king as he rode, not on a regal horse or high above the people on an imposing camel, but sitting on a donkey. As he plodded along on the stocky little animal, he simply smiled and waved, though I think I saw some tears as well. Maybe it was the dust. He seemed calm, but my heart was racing with excitement. We were heading for the temple. Maybe there he would step off the donkey and make a speech calling the people to revolution. I sensed it was going to be a great day. When we eventually arrived at the temple, he stepped off the donkey and without turning to speak to the crowd, he went into the precincts. I thought that was odd, but then I realised he must be going in to pray before making his great speech. He was making the crowd wait, a great ploy to build expectation and intensity. I followed him excitedly with the other disciples. It was business as usual in the temple, the smell of incense mixed with the burning meat of sacrifices. worshippers coming and going as ever, some rejoicing and others lamenting. Imperious priests, scribes and Pharisees strutting about importantly. The money changers and the people who sold animals for the sacrifices, calling out, advertising their wares. As we entered, Jesus suddenly seemed to lose his temper. He took my breath away again. I'd never seen him like this before. He shouted, "This is a house of prayer, not a den of robbers." And he tipped over several tables. Coins were scattered everywhere, and doves and pigeons flew into the air. In their panic, some flew into the temple to be trapped amongst the dusty beams of the roof. Once the coins had stopped spinning and rolling and the screeching birds had dispersed, there was an odd silence. My heart was still racing, an excited, supportive, expectant crowd outside the temple, a violent demonstration of anger inside the temple. The intensity of the atmosphere was building. Now, maybe he would go out to address the crowd. The new kingdom was coming near. The days of Roman oppression were coming to an end. He didn't go outside. He went over to the area in the precincts where the beggars congregated. And his anger seemingly passed. He began to talk and pray with them. He laid his hands on some and embraced others. We had no idea what to do. There was an excitable crowd of people outside waiting for him to do or say something. There were some very angry businessmen and women scrabbling in the shadows and down the cracks of stones for their coins, and others trying to catch their pigeons and doves. And as ever, there were the priests, scribes and Pharisees angrily watching everything. The crowd outside were quieter now. I was worried that the moment to ignite the revolution might be passing. And then we heard some children. They were still chanting, singing out their support for Jesus. "Hosanna to the Son of David." Jesus left the poor, sick beggars and began to walk out of the temple precincts. He walked past a group of fuming chief priests and scribes. "You hear those children?" he said quietly to the religious leaders. "They know what they're talking about. They know more than you." He smiled. And we walked out into the sunshine. Maybe this was going to be the moment. As they saw him emerge from the temple, the murmuring crowd quietened, waiting for him to speak. He turned his back on them and beckoned to the one of us who'd gone to get the donkey at the beginning of the day. "Please take the donkey back where you found him and thank the owner," he said. Then he turned to the rest of us and with his familiar gentle smile he said, "Come on friends, let's walk to Bethany. We'll stay there tonight. Maybe we can persuade Martha and Mary to prepare us some food." And that was it. The day was coming to a close. A day when we had a crowd. When he had a crowd who loved him in the palm of his hand. A day when he could have started a revolution in a heartbeat. A day when the new kingdom could have been born and our hated enemies overthrown by a loyal mob asserting their rights and their power to practice their faith and run their own country. And there we were, walking to Bethany to beg for food, and the crowd, frustrated and confused, returning to their homes. As we walked, I could hear a few children still excitedly singing in the distance. "Hosanna to the Son of David." Expectation, excitement, confusion, disappointment, frustration. These intense emotions led me eventually, at the end of that day, to anger. I clung to that anger and allowed it to grow. Anger was good. I believed anger was the fuel of revolution. I didn't show my anger. It seethed within me beneath an air of calm acceptance. Martha and Mary did feed us, and then we found an empty barn to sleep in. Most of my friends fell asleep immediately, but I lay awake. I watched through the large holes in the roof as the last rays of the sun gave way to stars in the night sky. I let my anger intensify. One angry man could not start a revolution. Where else had I seen anger as the events of the day had unfolded? Jesus had been angry, but only for a moment. It had soon passed. Then I remember those angry scribes and Pharisees in the temple precincts. I knew their anger was deep-seated. Then I remembered the confused and frustrated crowd. I began to wonder if there might be a way to combine my anger with that of the scribes and Pharisees, to transform the confusion and frustration of the crowd into anger as well. Maybe then there'd be enough to start the revolution. But where did Jesus fit into my thinking? My disappointing hero. I loved him, for sure. But he was the spark that could ignite all the smouldering rage in me and these others, so that the fire of revolution could burn. The wind blew. Clouds covered the stars and the moon. As the night enfolded me in darkness, a plan began to form in my mind.